I'm Rusty Gaffney. I'm the editor and publisher of The Pinophile, which is the first wine newsletter exclusively devoted to Pinot Noir at princeofpinot.com. And today we're talking about discovering new Pinot Noir stars. These are the young hounds in the race, the new people on the block. These days, with the rising popularity of Pinot Noir, there certainly are a large number of new producers of good Pinot Noir. This year is interesting in that it marks the 150th anniversary of Buena Vista Carneros and the 125th anniversary of Buente. That's a long time to be making wine. And most of these producers here only have a couple of vintages under their belt. Nevertheless, the wine business has changed markedly in those 100-150 years. And today, the sophistication in vineyard management and winemaking has progressed to the point that our young producers, our new producers, are making remarkably good wines. I'd like to introduce you to the panel from left to right. This is Tracy Bledsoe from Three Sticks Wines in Sonoma. Next to her is Jamie Kutch, Kutch Wines in Sonoma. Roger Nicholas from R.N. Estate in Paso Robles. And Sean and Jerry Bybee from the Russian River Valley, Sebastopol. And what I'm going to do is ask them each to talk a little bit about their winery, how it began, how it's coming along. Talk a little bit about the wine they poured for us to try today. Talk about being new in the business. How do you strike some recognition amongst all the competition? So as far as your wines, we're going to start with Tracy. The Three Sticks wine is on your right, so we're going right to left as we go down this way. And feel free to smell and taste and whatever you like while we're talking, and we hope that you'll find this of interest.
Hello, I'm Tracy Bledsoe, and I'm the assistant winemaker and enologist at Three Sticks Wines in Sonoma. First of all, I just want to thank you, Rusty, for putting this panel together and for including us in it. This is our first opportunity to present a wine here at the Pinot Shootout, and so we're very pleased to have the opportunity. Three Sticks Wines was founded in 2002. Our owner is Bill Price, and he is very active in the wine community, very knowledgeable, has input in our winemaking. He's also the owner of Durell Vineyards. So Durell Vineyards is a world-class wine producer of Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Syrah, Zinfandel, among other varietals, and they produce and sell grapes to a number of different very highly renowned wineries, Kistler, Patson Hall, Chateau St. Jean, Flowers, just to mention a few of them. Also, a number of those wineries produce Durell Vineyard designate wines, so that shows you really, you know, sort of the quality of the fruit that we're talking about. So we are in the enviable position of having Durell Vineyards as our estate vineyards. So this means that we get to take advantage of all the years of experience of the vineyard manager, Steve Hill, and use that to our advantage in choosing the vineyard blocks that we would like to use for wine, as well as to develop for future harvests. The first three vintages of Three Sticks Wines were done as sort of a custom crush type of arrangement at different wineries. So from 2002 on until 2005, when we found our home and moved into our new facility in Sonoma. We're in sort of a really unique area of Sonoma where we have a couple of large warehouse buildings that each suite houses a different winery of different size, some small, some very large, all very different arrangements and logistical setups. Ours is pretty small, but very high-tech equipment. Everything is portable. So, for example, our harvest equipment, all of our crush equipment, fermenters, presses, etc., are portable. We can move them around, and then at the end of harvest, we can put them away and bring out whatever equipment we need for the season. So it's really very unique type of setup. We are also 100% solar powered. We have solar panels on the roof, and We are in this winemaking community that also has its own on-site wastewater treatment. So that's something that's kind of unique. Our winemaker is Don Van Staveren. He has just a world of extensive experience in winemaking, quite a resume that he brings to Three Sticks. More recently, he was the winemaker at Artesa Vineyards and Winery, where he pretty much led the conversion from 100% sparkling wine to being a world-class still wine producer within just a few years. Prior to that, he was at Chateau St. Jean, of course, always producing fantastic wines, and in the 90s especially with the Bordeaux blends, he basically put them on the map with the 100-point perfect score, Cinque-Cépage. So we're doing great here. We have, you know, quite a good team that we're putting together. And Don's winemaking really can be seen in everything that we've done so far, just with the depth and the balance and the complexity. Our goal at Three Sticks is to produce small lots of stellar wines that reflect our estate vineyards at Doral. So primarily here we're talking about our Chardonnay, our Pinot Noir. Also in 2008, we are looking forward to releasing our first Bordeaux blend. That comes from a couple of vineyard blocks on the hillsides of Sonoma. So that's something that we're really looking forward to. The 2005 vintage that I'm pouring for you is our first vintage in our permanent facility. It also represents an increase in production for us to about 1,000 cases. So a little bit more than a third Pinot Noir, a little less than a third Chard, and about a third Cabernet. So just moving on to the wine, why not just move on to tasting the wine? The 05 Three Sticks Pinot Noir is what we've poured for you, and it's number 4. This wine we produced 385 cases, and I'll just briefly mention a couple of winemaking points. If you have more interest and have more questions, you can ask me, but I'm not going to totally geek out on you and start giving you, you know, chemistries and things like that. We do 14 months of barrel age, 100% French oak, 50% new, 50% used. Traditional winemaking methods, really with a mind towards minimal handling, being very gentle with the fruit. We don't crush anything, just destemmed whole berry fermentations. We do a lot of lees contact, barrel stirring, and try to do very little movement of the wine. And when we do, we try to do a lot of gravity flow, just anything that's very gentle. With this wine that you're tasting, I think when you first approach it, what you get right up front is you get a really nice barrel spice component, some spice, some nutmeg, some vanilla. And then underneath that, you get the core of fruit. A lot of cherry syrup and raspberry. On the palate also, you get that sweet impression, cherry raspberry with the well-integrated oak, sort of a velvety round core and a long finish. It's got good solid acidity. I think it's going to age well. And I think it's very representative of the 05 vintage, with that being, you know, sort of a long, cool vintage. We didn't get a lot of heat during harvest, so we got a lot of flavor development, complexity without pushing the sugars too high. We're not talking about a lot of alcohol, you know, big brawny wine. We're talking about a nice, balanced, full, elegant wine.
What is the alcohol?
I believe it's 14.3 or 14.4.
Where is it derailed?
It's in Sonoma. So basically just going west of the town of Sonoma on Arnold Drive, out in the hills out there towards the west. It's actually in an interesting sort of intersection between Sonoma Coast, Sonoma Valley, and I think that portions of it are Carneros also, but not the portion that we're getting our fruit from.
How old are these vines?
These vines are 8 years old.
And is it a mix of clones?
Yeah, the clone mixture on this wine in particular, it's three different blocks that we use, 667, 777, and 115. I think we get a lot of fruit intensity from the 115, but we get more sort of a complete wine from the other blocks with, you know, sort of more acidity and balance. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. As most of you probably know, these are not the best glasses for evaluating Pinot Noir. you just don't quite get the full expression of aromatics and flavors. Unfortunately, for events like this, it's fairly impractical to have a huge quantity of Burgundy-style glasses. So you need to take that into account. But nevertheless, you certainly can get a feel for the wines. The next speaker is Jamie Kutch, Kutch Wines.
Thank you for allowing me to be here, Rusty, and for all you individuals showing up to taste and experience my wine. My name is Jamie Kutch, and the label is Kutch Wines, like Rusty had said. I'm a one-man show. I left a career in Manhattan, New York. I was a NASDAQ trader about 4 years ago. I was a huge compulsive wine geek. Spent day and night on chat boards and with tasting groups that we put together, and I'd sneak into trade tastings, whether it was Skernix Wines or Polan or some of the big distributors in New York. So I was I was really into it. I had a great network of friends as well in New York. So I told the story on a chat board, Robert Parker's chat board, and about how I was going to move out to California to follow my dream. I had written a gentleman named Michael Brown of Costa Brown Wines an email saying, you know, you're truly living my dream. And he said something to the effect of, if you want it to be your dream, come on out and I'll help you make it a reality. So I moved, and it's been a ride ever since. It's been awesome, and I couldn't say one negative thing about the business, the people, and the exciting challenges that it gives you and throws at you. Every year you're at the mercy of Mother Nature. When I was thinking about what to say, instead of telling you and talking about the story, though, I'd like to talk about wines. I think the most challenging thing for wines and creating Pinot Noir in California is the vineyards and the fruit. So, you know, there's a lot of winemaking techniques and different things you can do to make different styles of Pinot Noir, but to make great Pinot Noir, it comes from the vineyard. And one of the problems with California and Pinot Noir producers is that the large majority of people buy their fruit. So when you're buying fruit, you're at the mercy, you're in a constant battle with growers. And growers want to reap profits by growing fruit and hanging more fruit than the winemaker might want. So when you carry and hang more fruit on a vine, you lose flavor and concentration and depth. These are the challenges that I've found so far with making Pinot. And then the question might be, how do you rectify this? And that's to try and go into contracts where there's you might be paying by the acre. This way you can actually control and talk to the grower and have the vineyard farmed the way that you want it to be farmed. And that might be carrying less yield or pulling leaves. As well, you can also try and lease vineyards and have them planted for you. And that's where the ultimate control is. And if you have the real deep pockets, go and buy a vineyard and, you know, I guess you do the whole thing. So that's my approach now, is where my brand is trying to go. I'm trying to lease vineyards, and I have a vineyard being planted in Chileno Valley, a 4-acre site. So that's the next step. So the first vintage I released last year was an 05 Russian River Valley. It was 150 cases. This year is my second vintage, 2006 Russian River Valley, which you're tasting. It's a blend of two different vineyards that I sourced fruit from. One is called Kanzler, and the other vineyard is called John's Vineyard. John's Vineyard is located about a half a mile away from Kanzler, and it is right next to Mary Edwards Meredith Estate. So the way I've learned how to try and learn about wine, because I don't have a degree in Davis, and I go on my palate, so I use my taste to lead me into the expression in wines I want to make. I'm a minimalist. I believe in Burgundian style wines. We still are living in California, so I'm not trying to make Burgundy. But when a place in the world has been making wines for hundreds of years, I think it's important to look up to them and learn from what they've done. So some of my approaches are to use native yeast, to not use commercial yeast. I'm 100% gravity. I believe in minimalist intervention, and minimalist intervention means such things as not adding enzymes, not adding products to the wine to alter it or to change it or to smooth it out or whatever you may be. Is this the right way to make Pinot Noir? I couldn't tell you yet. You know, you can ask me in 25 years. But it's much like art, you know. Some people like abstract and some people like contemporary, and for me, I'm just excited to be doing this and to trying to test my approach. So it's exciting, it's a blast. What else can I tell you? Does anyone have any questions first off? Yes, sir.
You used the word Burgundian. What does that mean to you?
That's a good question. I think the Burgundian approach to winemaking starts, again, in the vineyard, and that's why my focus is a lot on the vineyard at this point. And control of the vineyard. I was at the event last night, the Palais, and there was a gentleman named Monti, and he makes Grand Cru Burgundies, and his family has been making wine for a long time. And the first question he had when he tasted my wine was, do you have control of the vineyard? And I said, not yet. I said, those are my steps. The second part to your question is doing things to try and create the wine and being as gentle as humanly possible. And that means such things as using gravity and not using a pump. That means such things as not using enzymes to extract. That means...
So that if I understand you correctly, it's the approach that you're taking in the cellar, vineyards in the cellar, as much as possible.
That is correct, yes, sir.
Versus what's in the bottle and what we would be tasting and comparing it to.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yield cones and wood?
Absolutely, sure. 30% whole cluster. So whole cluster, for those who you are not aware, is you leave the stems on with the berries. I ferment in small bins. They're 3/4-ton bins. They might be about the width of your table. They might come up to about my mid-chest. I don't ferment any large lots, being such a small producer. And so I do specific lots when the stem is lignified, is the word. When the stem, the end of the cluster, turns brown, it means it's lignified. So you want vineyards that are, the stems are more lignified so that you don't get green characteristics. To go a step further, I pay extra money for this, but the farmers, when they go into the vineyard with their crew, you want them to use clippers. You don't want knives. And if you can understand that, oh, you would have to be in a vineyard when it's being picked, because when you use a knife, it rips the vine, and the sap runs from the green stems, and you'll get more green characteristics. Oak treatment is approximately 30%, never any more. But I believe that oak scars a wine. And I have a vineyard that I designated in 2006. It's called McDougal. It's out on the coast. It's 3 miles from the Pacific. It's about 935 feet in elevation. Jason Palmyre is about 1/4 mile away. David Hirsch is about 1 mile away. So these are great vineyards. And Ulysses Valdez is a fantastic farmer. He farms the vineyard for me. But where was I going with this? I think, the wood, 100% neutral oak, no new oak, because I didn't want to scar the fruit. The fruit was immaculate when it came in. And I work at a facility. I make my wine at a facility. It's called Deerfield Ranch up in Sonoma. And we must have brought in, I don't know, 60 to 80 different lots. And the assistant winemaker said to me, this is the most beautiful fruit that I've seen all harvest. So it was gorgeous. So with that, I didn't want to put something that would erase that sense of place. Burgundians use the word terroir with oak. So you might not have as much grip in the mouth and as much length, because oak will tend to give you more length. But, you know, it's just, I guess it's a learning process.
And yield?
I believe that vineyard, I get a 1-acre parcel. I think I had, in 2005, I ended up with, well, I wasn't buying by the acre. That's hard to say. I actually don't know the yield. From the eyeball, I would probably say it was definitely less than 3. It was more than 2, so I'd put it somewhere right in between there.
What are we drinking?
You're drinking my 2006 Russian River, Russian River Valley, which is a blend of Candler, and I think I mentioned earlier, John's Vineyard. Yes, ma'am.
I missed what you said about Chileno Valley.
So Chileno Valley, right outside the town of Chileno Valley, on Spring Hill Road, there's a vineyard that's been planted.
And I think that's part of this?
This is not. I'm sorry if I've been confusing people. The Chileno Valley property, it's called Spring Hill, and they've had planted 2 different parcels. One has been planted for flowers, which has now being pulled. They will no longer get the fruit. The other parcel was going to Nickel and Nickel, and it's a beautiful vineyard. I've been cultivating a relationship with the owners, Chris and Karen London, for some time, and they will plant 4 acres for me. I believe in, I think the question earlier was about clones. The clones that will go into that site are all, they're called suitcase clones, so they were carried back from Burgundy. They're no Dijon clones. Dijon clones are clones that are, I would probably say, 80 to 90% of the clones in California planted to Pinot Noir are planted to Dijon clones. Dijon clones sugar up faster. They create higher alcohol wines. The wines that you're experiencing, my wine that you're tasting right now is Dijon. I believe it's 667 and 777. So the clones that I will be planting, one is called Calera, it goes by the name of. Calera is a popular winery that they planted in 76. Josh Jensen took the clippings from Dick Graff, who had planted a vineyard called Chalon. Earlier than that, they're on limestone, which majority of Burgundy is planted on limestone. And they make some of the greatest wines, age-worthy wines that I've ever experienced or tasted in California. So I'm planting that clone, and I'm also planting Swan, which Joseph Swan as well brought back clippings from Burgundy back in the day. So when these clones are on the, after they snip these, the budwood in this time of the year, the winter time when the vines are dormant, you can take that budwood to a nursery and have that grafted onto rootstock and then plant it. So again, I'm sorry if I dissected or got off track, but I hope that gives everybody a little bit of an understanding of what I'm trying to do and the approach. You know, it's funny because I guess I was out here with my inaugural vintage for 3 months prior to harvest. I had no winemaking experience. I hadn't gone to Davis. So I really mentored under Michael Brown of Costa Brown. And in that time, I've learned a lot in my style and my approach and my ideals, and tasting in cellars with winemaking friends has changed enormously in the last just a short 2 years. So my beliefs and the wines that I'm making, they take some time to get into the market. I'm trying to keep my production small so that I can find my way and make and create these wines that I so desire. But subsequently, you get one shot a year. I also barrel down for 16 months. A lot of producers barrel down for 11 months, so the wines come out quicker. So I'm actually investing and putting money into wines at two vintages at a time. Every single thing that I do in the winery and in the vineyard is the highest quality I can possibly do. And if that means that I buy 4-year air-dried Francois Frere barrels, or if that means that I, you know, use gravity and it takes me an extra, I don't even know, 4 hours to get, you know, 6 barrels filled with gravity, I do everything humanly possible. Does it show through in the wines? You hope so. If you can get an edge of 5%, you know, that means a lot to me. The passion is there, and, you know, I do everything from the winemaking to the vineyards to the buying, to the charging and the sales and the emails and the marketing. And so I'm a little tired today because, it's been a busy week. But so last question, Esther.
Yeah, was there an area or a winery in Burgundy that was your original role model?
That changes a lot. I like pure wines and like I was talking, I think I said unadulterated Pinots. So the person who I look up to enormously is a guy named Freddie Meunier. He makes beautiful Burgundies, very age-worthy wines. They're very delicate and feminine. And these are all things that I believe in Pinot. It should be a feminine wine. I don't like the masculine style. Like I said, we're getting there. Here in California, I have the utmost respect for a gentleman named Ted Lemon. He makes wines from Litteri. I believe they're some of the best wines in all of California. And the gentleman to my right, Rusty, I'm sure would agree wholeheartedly. He's a huge fan. So, you know, you try to meet these people and learn from them and write them emails and take approaches and follow in their lead. Everybody has their own stamp, but these are people how I have the utmost respect. And they're both of those two winemakers believe in the vineyard is number one priority. So, again, wine is made in the vineyard. It's not made by the hand of the winemaker. I'm just trying to pass on the expression. So thank you all very much, and enjoy the wine.
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you for having me here. Thank you for all sharing the Pinot Noir, my favorite wine in the world. My name is Roger Nicholas. It sounds different in French. It's Roger Nicolas. Just in case you think there is a little thing in the accent here, I was born and raised in France, came to this country when I was 20 years old, from Fifth Avenue, New York to California, to La Grenouille, New York, the Lodge at Pebble Beach, L'Etoile in San Francisco. I forged my way in the restaurant industry, had my first restaurant at 30 years old, And the only thing I could dream of then was to be able to retire. And I worked very hard, and at 50 years old, I retired. I thought. I didn't really retire because I worked the harder I have ever done. I thought the first part of the life is to work hard, raise children, and learn a lot. The second part is to play. And I think this was a fantasy that I'm living now in having a vineyard and making wine. It is not that glamorous every day, but I want to share that with you. You may wonder, my wine is number two, by the way. I wish you were number one, really. I think it's number one, but it's number two on your list. So the name Aaron, you probably wonder what it means. My last name, Nicolas, is the name of the biggest producer of wines in France. They are brokers and they make a lot of table wines. When I became bonded a few years back, I consulted a couple of attorneys to find out if I could use the name. The Maison Nicolas trademarked the name worldwide. They advised me that I shouldn't use the name, and the purpose was if I become popular, start hitting in the 90s, and I said, it's not if, it's when. And so I'm here today. Thank you for including me here, by the way, Rusty. So Aaron Estate is not a very glamorous name like Domaine Nicolas, but I get a lot of RNs when I'm out in public tasting in a booth. A lot of registered nerds come in. My style of winemaking is influenced a lot by my background in a restaurant business. I call my wines food friendly. And in 2000, I bought an estate in Paso Robles, 40 acres. And turn 4 acres only of the 40 acres into producing red Rhone and red Bordeaux varietals. But Pinot Noir is my favorite wine. I have too much respect for it to try to grow Pinot Noir in a side of Paso Robles I'm in. So this Pinot Noir that we are having here tonight is from Phil Stick's Vineyard in Santa Rita Hills. It's just between Bulton and Lompoc. It's right below Sea Smoke. And so to make a food-friendly wine, really, I don't like a wine. I like a wine that enhances food, that complements food, rather than dominate it. And I do minimal work with the grapes. And I really agree with Jamie that said earlier, I really believe that the wine is made in a vineyard, particularly learning from my own vineyard. The wine that you're tasting, I chose. There are all kinds of Pinot Noirs you have been tasting nowadays, particularly since the movie Sideways. I mean, everybody has put out any kind of Pinot Noir that was possible. You have Pinot Noir that are a little bit lighter in appearance, some that are very dark, almost as dark as Syrah. Personally, I think I will use the Pinot Noir is silk for me and not corduroy. And there are a lot of dark Pinot Noirs that remind me of corduroy here. My taste of Pinot Noir is silk. It's a feminine, elegant silk. So this is made of three clones, and they're all three Dijon clones. I chose clone 667 to give it a texture and a little bit of color. But by itself, it did not impress me that much. I wanted to really, I believe the balance of the wine is its glory often. So I chose clone 115. Which is the most perfumey clone for me anyway. It reminds me of Fraise des Bois, those little oblong-shaped strawberries you find in Europe often, and also rose petals. And here again, I bring to your attention my style of Pinot Noir making. I extracted very little, maybe a day of two of cold maceration. I let it ferment. I use a commercial yeast because I like to control the fermentation. I like my wines very dry, and I do not like any residual sugar. I'm not going for glories of the critics, but more expressing my individual style of winemaking and the regional diversity in the wines and let the terroir express itself. So the Clone 115 adds that beautiful aroma and perfume. And then I use Clone 113. 113 is not often used as often here. Clone 113 is very light. It has a delicate aroma, but its main characteristic, where these wines come from, and this doesn't work in every site and every vineyard. In Santa Rita Hills at Cathy Joseph Vineyard, the 113 has a tendency to retain the acidity. So I use a Clone 113 to add a structure to the wine, and between 113 and 115, 667, I came up with what you have in glass number two. It's aged, but I have been aging it. This is the very first Pinot Noir I have made. This is my very beginning. I'm very happy with it in a way. I aged it 14 months in barrels on its own lease, never touched, never racked since its pressing. I use a very small press, basket press, with a wooden basket so we don't have to handle it too rough. I press the wine without its seeds. It's about 90% of the seeds are removed. It's all handled by hand into the press. And this gives it a softer mouth feel at the beginning. 35% of the barrels were new. I use Sirug. I also use Chagny from Segamoro. The other 60% are barrels that are about 3 to 4 years old, mostly neutral. I think that's about how much I can tell about this wine. I will just remind you that the style I was after is, some people call it a Burgundian style. I like my wines to be translucent or transparent. I like to see through the wines. This was not fine nor filtered, just handled very cleanly, very gently. I will say one more thing. I really believe in the Pinot Noir. I was born and raised in France, but when you go from one little village to the other, you will walk from Malox-Corton, you go to Moret-Saint-Denis, you will go to Codenuit, Côte d'Or, you will walk across the road and you'll come across different styles of Pinot Noir. They are the same clones, actually. It's the same terroir, it's the same weather, little soil, little variation in inclination of the soil will give you a lot of character, a lot of unique character. We have a different climate there, so I'm not trying to make a French wine, but using the cool climate of Santa Rita Hills, it's one of the coolest ones here besides, I guess, the Russian River, maybe deep in Alexander Valley, Anderson Valley, rather. That's basically, and I do not believe in having a universal style of Pinot Noir. I will never try to make it darker. I let it light, let it express itself. Any questions?
How much of a difference in sugar would you see between a commercial yeast and natural?
The natural yeast, you know, many people use natural yeast, but you have to be careful here in California, particularly even in the Central Coast. It's very nice to see, to say that you're using an indigenous yeast. But if you have other wines, and I rent a commercial building in Paso Robles to make my wines, if you leave the indigenous yeast ferment your wine, and you have someone with Assmanhauser, RC212, or VR254, your indigenous yeast is going to take flavor of any other yeast. So I like to, the yeast that will take power, that will take the offensive in your batch, is generally going to control your fermentation. I also see so many wines with residual sugar, and they get the highest scores. I am not going for the scores, really. I'm going for my passion. That's why I use commercial yeast. I hope you answered your question. Thank you very much.